Welcome to the HSCT Warriors Podcast, bringing voice to the journeys of HSCT Warriors worldwide. I'm Dr. Jen Stansberry Koenig, or Zen Jen, and so grateful to share this story with you. As we continue to grow the HSCT Warrior community, illuminate the invisibilities of autoimmune disease, recognize the possibilities of a future free from disease progression, connect through our shared experiences, and advocate for an inclusive society. We're so glad you've joined us. So welcome, Fiona. I'm so grateful to connect with you and hear more about your story with HSCT. Welcome,
well,
welcome.
Thank you
so much for being here and sharing. So usually we get started with just learning a little bit more about you and your experience with diagnosis, if you're comfortable sharing that story.
Oh, goodness.
It's been a while, right?
Yeah, 18 years. So,
goodness.
There's been a lot of stuff that actually is kind of is being found out now, which is very odd because it's a long time since I've been diagnosed. But I was in 2005, I was hit by a drunk driver
and
on the May long weekend. And I didn't think I had any symptoms prior to that. And so I was 32, I guess, when that happened. And within probably 2 months, I was high symptoms. I already had optic neuritis and in both eyes, and I had lost use of my left side of my body. And that all happened between June and October when I was diagnosed, and I'd been taken into the emergency by ambulance from the physio department when I lost my vision one day. Well, I hadn't actually lost my vision. I just lost the color. I couldn't see color anymore.
Oh, wow.
And then, and so I told my physiotherapist and he said, well, we'll watch it and see what happens. And because it could be because I'm messing with your neck or something. Right. And I'm like, okay. And so then the very next day I went in for 2 days later, I guess, went back to physio, and then that's when my left side went. So then they rushed me to the hospital thinking I was having had a stroke.
And, goodness. That must've been so stressful.
Yeah. It was scary for sure. And then they took me to the hospital and they did a CT scan of my head and it didn't show anything. And then I had an emergency MRI done and that came back with 16 lesions on my brain.
Goodness.
And all of them were highlighted, magnified on with the dye. And so, yeah, it was pretty shocking. And then I had another, that was in October. And then I had another one in December and I had 19 lesions. So,
oh my goodness.
My disease is very rapid. And then from 2005 to 2009, I had never gone in remission. It was just always steady attack. And then I ended up paralyzed from my waist down, completely paralyzed.
Goodness.
And then they had me in the hospital for 6 months, in 2009. And I had already been walking with my walker. They already had a ramp on my house. They already had, I already couldn't hold, like I couldn't hold. So my hands were going and everything just kind of spiraled and like really, really very fast. So in 2009, they got me into the foothills again and I ended up being, then they started me on chemotherapy because I had a year and a half of Copaxone and it didn't do anything.
A
year and a half of Revif and it didn't do anything. And so then they started me on cyclophosphamide and I also had plasmapheresis twice. So, but yeah, I had 2 doses, like 10 doses of that, 2 different times. Yeah, it was crazy. I went from 0 to 60 really, really fast.
Really, and it sounds like the doctors really just didn't know what to do.
Well, they didn't because I actually have what I have, most people call it malignant MS, but it's called Marburg variants. And that's the actual only terminal form, because MS can kill people. It's the only terminal form of MS. It's only 2% of the MS population. Most people have never even heard of it. The people in the MS
Right.
Society didn't know what I was talking about.
Of
And
course.
even the doctors were, they're like, it's so rare. Most people, they find out after they've died when they do their autopsy.
Oh my goodness. And so, what was the label again? Can you?
Marburg, so MARBURG,
Marburg.
Marburg.
And you're saying, and it is so goodness. That must have been overwhelming for everyone involved. I mean, certainly you.
It was, well, I could, everything happened so fast that I don't even like, when I was so sick, I don't barely remember, like, and there was just so much. I was so busy trying. I didn't even realize I was dying. I kept ignoring the nurse, my MS nurse, when she kept to, Fiona, you're different. Like, 'cause my mom had progressive MS and my sister has secondary progressive.
Oh,
And
goodness.
so mine was like progressive MS on speed.
Sounds like it. And so it's amazing they even thought to try the chemotherapy. And did that give some relief?
Well, okay, so they started that in January. I was in rehab and it was like a ma it was magical to me. Like, I was able to stand in phys like in the bars, and I was able to it was almost scary how much it changed. So I took my first dose January 7th in rehab, and then I got my second dose of cyclo like 2 weeks later, and then I got my third dose in the middle of February, beginning of February. And by the end of, I think at the end of February 26th or something, I can remember I had gone, I've now been transferred back because I was so sick in rehab. They're like, we can't keep you here because we can't help. You have to be getting better in rehab, not worse.
Well,
And
you not that you could help it.
I'm trying really hard. And so
Right.
they had sent me home at that point, into my home hospital, and had said that I had progressed to secondary progressive. And that is highly unusual within like 3 years, right?
Of course.
And so then when I got out home, and then I got another call from some doctors in Calgary, and they had said that they had had a meeting about me, and that they now had looked over MRIs and stuff and had diagnosed me with Marburg's. And I guess so. Anne and Lorraine were two people. Anne used to run the MS Society in Lethbridge for like 25 years, and Lorraine ran the one in Red Deer here in Alberta. And they were friends, and they knew my mom because everybody in my life has MS, so everybody knows everybody. It's a small world.
Sure.
And then so. And my whole story is all about God and miracles, because I literally would not be here. So Anne had come back out, and she had stopped. They had been doing like a MS group thing, like a social thing for at the hospital in Blairmore, which is a very small town in southern Alberta. And they hadn't done it in like 15 years. And it was just the week I had showed up back at the hospital that they had started it up again after all that time. I know, right? And then I come rolling in my wheelchair, da da da, and Anne looks at me and she's like, Fiona? And I'm like, oh, hey, because of course she's with my mom. And I said, how are you doing? And she said, good. And I said, well, they just diagnosed me with Marburg variants. And she said, what the hell is that? Like, she was shocked, right? And I said, well, I don't know. Google it, I said.
Right. Well, yeah, back then, I mean, this is 2009, you said.
No, this was probably by now 2000 and end of 10,
Okay.
beginning of 11.
But still, like, early years of Google.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And they had, and she said, I've worked at the MS Society for 25 years, and I've never heard that word, that statement.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I didn't make it up. I mean, right. I'm pretty talented, but I can't just make stuff up.
Right.
And so, and at this point, when I was in rehab in Calgary before they sent me back, I had then lost. No, that was later yet. That was still later. I was back out home again when that happened. So this, we're now in 2010, and they transferred me back home. I started my chemotherapy, blah, 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 blah. And it was awesome. So February, I took that third dose. By the end of February, they had me up in a full body walker.
Oh.
They put the belt around your waist and under your butt. And then you
support, use your arm, yeah.
Like it's really tall. And so then because I was like, I want to try to walk, because I went to physio one day, and it was a Wednesday, and I was so excited because I was able to stand in the bars, right? And I said to my physiotherapist, I said, because somewhere in my brain, I was like, I bet you I can lift my foot. Like, just, I don't know where it came
right?
from.
And anyway, you got to listen to that, right?
Right. And I was like, I said, can I try to lift my foot? And he's like, well, of course you can try to lift your foot. And I'm like, okay. So I tried to lift my foot, and it didn't lift. Like, I didn't have enough power to lift it. However, he seen the muscle, and I felt it. I felt the muscle in my hip kind of like tweak, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he seen it move. And I'm like, and I squealed like a little. I'm like, oh my God, I felt it. He's like, I know. And then I tried my other foot, and did the same thing. I could lift it, but the muscle engaged. And then on Thursday, I went, he come to pick me up in my chair, and down to physio we go. And so I'm standing in the bars again. And I said, well, can I try to move my foot to the side? Like, just try to, like, an outside.
Sure. Shift it.
And same thing happened. I wasn't able to do it, but yet the muscle engaged.
Nice.
And I was just over the moon. I was just giggling and just, I mean, I'm pretty happy with anything, right?
So that's cool. Certainly to go from being paralyzed to even just having those muscles activate is amazing.
Right. And then, so Friday he came down to my hospital room, and he says, Fiona, I have a present for you. And I'm like, what? He says, hop in your chair. You'll see it when you get down there. And again, I go around the corner, and there's this huge walker, right? And I'm like, holy crap, do I get to walk? And he said, we're going to just maybe try to take a couple of steps. And
lovely.
I said, okay. And I walked 30 feet that day.
Hooray.
Yeah, I hadn't taken a step in 6 months, and I walked 30 feet that day.
Wow.
And then the next day, I was mad as a hot hen because I'm in the hospital, and physios don't work on Sunday or Saturday and Sunday in the hospital.
And you want to walk again.
And I wanted to walk.
Yeah.
So then they put me in my wheelchair, and I propelled everywhere. Like, just, it was, I just was like, my little leg, I was just propelling. I don't know if you know, do you know what that is?
Yeah, using your heels.
Yeah, so I'm propelling all over the hospital, and that was the first day in my whole life I'd ever been on pain medication, but because that night my muscles were so angry.
Oh, right, having not been used for so long. Isn't atrophy amazing? Like, how quickly it sets in, and then how difficult it is to shift away from it.
Oh, absolutely.
Goodness.
Yeah. And so I propelled all that day, Saturday, and then they wrapped my legs with heat because they were spasming like crazy.
Oh.
And then Sunday, most people be like, I'm going to take a day of rest. Nope, there I am, all over the hospital. And then Monday morning, of course, physio's back in. And then that day, that Monday, I said, and then he put me with a little walker. No, we still used the big walker that day, I think. And I walked, I think, like 380 feet or something. Like, it
Goodness.
Was a lot.
Wow.
Right? When I only did like 30 feet on Friday, but he didn't even think I'd take a step on Friday. Like, he was stunned that I walked at all. And so it was, yeah, it was really, I haven't talked about this stuff in a long time. That's cool. Anyway, and I was just so, and you give me an inch and I'm going to take a mile, right? Like, that's my personality. And and then I was out of the hospital by, when did I get released? I think April of 2010. And then I was a long haul truck driver. So of course I'm on short-term disability. And I'm like, June comes and my short term's coming up. And I said, I need to go to work. Like, you guys got to, it's like, I gotta go.
Right. We got to figure something
And I
out.
was, what was that?
You got to figure something out so you can get back to work.
Right. So I went to work for a couple of months and then end up sick. I got an infection and my bladder is my nemesis. There's no two ways about it, still even today. And matter of fact, I was in the hospital and paralyzed last Sunday. So don't, 2 Sundays ago.
Goodness.
So anyway, so it was just I just got better and better and better. And then I ended up in the hospital again for 2 weeks and then come back out and got back in my truck and went to work. And then that's really when everything went haywire. So say August of 2010 to end of January of 2011. I was just getting worse and worse and worse. Because when the chemo started, they said I can, my neurologist said, I can promise you a year, but that's all. Once it stops working, there's nothing else that we can do for you. Like, at that point, it'll be between you and God because we have no more medication to give you. Like, there's nothing
Goodness.
we can do. And so it worked from January, that January, right through till August, I guess. June, July, August, it had already started to wane, stop working, and I was taking chemo every 2 weeks,
Okay.
and they and then it just stopped working the same as everything else had. And I woke up one day in, now I'm back on short-term disability again, the end of January. I was out. I was so sick. Oh my God, I can't even, just thinking about that time, it was awful. I had gone to pick up a truck or a trailer in Grand Prairie, Alberta, Northern Alberta, and take it to Vancouver. And it was blizzarding and snowing. It was awful weather. And I phoned my dispatch when I was in Merritt at the top of the Coquitlam Hall, and I said, when I get to Vancouver, I need you to get me a trailer to come straight back to Calgary because I just am not capable of doing this anymore. I was finally tapping out, and that's why I said to her, I said, I'm tapping out. And she said, okay. And within 5 minutes, the phone rang, and it was my safety guy at work, and he said, Fiona, we need you to go to the Hope Hospital when you get down the hill. And I said, okay. So I went down the hill and parked my semi out, like probably half a kilometer, whatever, from the hospital. And I started walking. And I don't know if you know anything about, because you're in Ontario, I don't know if you know anything about Hope, BC, but it's right at the very base of a mountain. And so when it gets snow and rain, and like it's just gross, like the weather there's awful. And this was the 24th of January now of
2011.
2011. And so I start walking or limping or whatever I was doing. And I got to this thing, what I thought was the hospital, and it was the old hospital. It was now an old folks home.
Oh no.
Right. And I just started to cry. And I was like, oh. And then of course, as soon as I start to cry, then then I can't walk because my brain's like,
Right.
I'm that
Yes.
broken, right?
Oh.
So then I'm crawling and it's snowing and cold and gross and wet and ugh, and I
Oh.
crawled and crawled and crawled, and I got right to the driveway of the hospital, and then my hips were gone. So now I can't even crawl. I'm laying there like a
Oh my
pancake in the
goodness.
driveway of the
Wow.
hospital. And of course, then some people ran in, got the emergency room staff and came out and put me on a stretcher and got me in there. And the doctor just looked at me and he says, I wish we just had a pill or a shot that we could give you to make this better. But he said, you've got nothing from your collarbone down. And I was like, I just need to sleep. If you let me rest, my body rejuvenates and I'll be able to do stuff tomorrow.
All right. Well, yeah, that's what we believe, right?
Right. Well, it did. I mean, it didn't fix me for any stretch of the imagination, but
No.
they kept me there overnight and I slept and had, it was good. And then in the morning, I was at least well enough to get a taxi to drive me back to my truck. And I crawled up in my truck very daintily and pulled myself, I guess, with my armor more than anything. And I crawled in my truck and I crawled in a bunk and I called work and I said, I can't drive. I have my legs are useless. And then so they flew somebody out from Calgary to drive my truck home and me. And I laid in that bunk and I just cried. I just cried and cried and cried. And then I got back home and Kyle, my caregiver, he was my caregiver at that point. He hadn't married me yet. Well, he was my death doula because he actually signed up to help me die when I was in palliative care.
Oh, wow.
And because I was at 9.0 on the EDSS scale. And so, yeah, so when we got, so April that happened, I was at Kyle's place in January. They come pick me up and took me home there. And I just laid in bed all the time. And then I got stronger and they put me on steroids again. And then I'm able to walk a little bit and paddle around with my wheelchair and whatever. And then in April, I woke up. It was a Saturday, and I yelled, "Kyle, Kyle!" He's like, "What's the matter?" He said, "I can't move. I'm paralyzed." At this point, I'm paralyzed completely from my breastbone down, and like not weak, but paralyzed. Like I literally could. I had no nothing, and so this Saturday, and he said, "Well, we gotta take you to the hospital." I said, "I'm not going to the hospital." Last time I went to the hospital, they told me they're keeping me for 2 days for observation. I was there for 6 months.
Right.
I'm like, I'm not going to the hospital. I don't trust those people at all.
Oh.
And so then Monday morning, I mean, he just poked me up on the pillows and fed me or whatever. It was easy. And he then Monday morning, I phoned my nurse, Kathy, and I said, "Kathy, I got some news." And she said, "What's going on, you know?" And I said, "I woke up on Saturday and I can't move anything from my, like, I can't move. I have no trunk at all, no trunk, no legs." And she's like, "Are you in the hospital?" And I'm like, "No."
No.
And she's like, "Fiona, if you were, I'm going to kick your ass." I'm
Right.
sorry. I don't know if I can swear on here. Anyway. So then she said, "We got to get you a bed and get you into the city." And there was no beds in the hospital on Monday. And so she said, so Tuesday morning, she phoned first thing and she said, "We got you a bed and we need you to be in by 4 because we live like 3.5 hours out of town, out of the city." And I said, "Okay." So Kyle came home from work and him and his buddy carried me out to his truck, like a plat, like a plank, like a piece of plywood,
Oh.
and got me in the truck and then piled me up with pillows on both sides so I wouldn't tip back and forth when Kyle was driving
Right.
the corners. And so then we get into Calgary and they've already got all my admitting papers in. I just need to get go to my room or whatever. And then everything just spiraled out of control. Like literally it had gone from my breastbone within I think probably 3 or 4 days had started to crawl up my up to my shoulders. Like I could feel it. Like I could feel my paralysis moving up my body. And yeah, and then I think within a week I could move my arms and it was up to my collarbone. And then yeah, that's just that was my worst physically for sure.
Terrifying, I can only imagine.
Yeah, it wasn't very pleasant, I can tell you. It was scary because well, because my mom had MS and my sister had MS and MS didn't do what was happening to me, right? Like it just,
Right.
I lived with MS. I watched my sister for 20 years at that point, and it doesn't do what it was doing to me. And we were all scared. My mom and dad were actually planning, they had already started to, when we went to Ottawa for my transplant, when like when all those miracles happened, like Anne getting a hold of like doing the research and coming back to me and saying, "Hey Fiona, Dr. Friedman's doing these studies in Ottawa, and Lorraine and I are going to go out and hear him talk, right? Listen to him speak." And that was in June. I was in the hospital again, paralyzed. Like now it's all right. I'm back in the hospital again, and her and Lorraine went out to Ottawa or to Montreal for a consortium they had, And Dr. Frieden was talking, he says, and I can only do with people that have Marburg variants.
Interesting.
And I'm right, because lots of people call it filament or malignant. There's lots of terms for it. And so if he has said any of those other terms, it wouldn't have triggered with Anne, right?
Right.
She flew home that day and she immediately called me and she says, Fiona, I talked, and here's another miracle. Okay, so I'm jumping over the place here. So they're in Montreal and Clay Walker, he has MS, that country singer. And so he was actually playing like a concert, but for the MS people or whatever. Whatever, when they do something for free, I can't think what it's called. And so Lorraine and Anne had gone back to their hotel, and Dr. Friedman had got out there his door, because the laymen go out one door and the physicians go out the other, right?
All right.
And so Anne's like excited as all get out. She's like wanting to, holy crap, Dr. Friedman can work on you. And so they're getting ready to go to this concert downtown Montreal. And there's a chapter in my book, it's called The Red Light. And Dr. Friedman and Anne and Lorraine, he wasn't going to the concert, but he was going out to dinner with some colleagues that night as they were walking to the concert. And they met at a red light, like they couldn't walk across the street. And Anne looked at Dr. Friedman and said, Dr. Mark, I have someone at home that has Marburg variants and she's very, very ill and they say she's dying. And he said, get all of her information to me, phone the hospital, talk to her neurologist, have all of her paperwork sent to me. And that was the start of saving my life right there.
Wow.
And how two people meet at a red light in downtown Montreal that are going to two different places, that's a big city, right?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So my next question was going to be, how did you even come to find about HSCT?
Well, I didn't, because I was busy trying not to die.
Right, exactly. But everyone else was learning about it for you. That's
Right.
amazing.
So my sister was doing research, because she's a researcher, and she's trying to figure out, like, she's phoning everybody, what's happening with my sister? Why is she not like us? What, like, I don't understand. And everybody was so afraid, and it was just such a terrible, terrifying time.
Surely.
My parents are like planning my funeral, and like it was just so awful.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, and so anyways, I'm now still, I'm back in Calgary at the hospital, paralyzed again for another 3 or 4 months, whatever it was. But now it's to my collarbone, and the doctors don't know what to do. They have all my meds at toxic levels. Like I was maxed out at gabapentin at 3,600 milligrams a day. Maxed out on baclofen for my spasticity. I was everything. I was taking 72 pills a day,
Wow.
and they had me completely maxed out on this. And then they started me on 1,250 milligrams of back of prednisone for the 35th time in my 5 years of whatever of MS, or 6 years. And so of course, so now they're doing testing on my lungs to make sure that I can go, because as soon as my paperwork went from Calgary to Ottawa, Dr. Friedman is like, we need to get her down here. And but you have to walk, like you have to be able to walk so many feet, right? I think it's
Wow.
100 feet or something. And I couldn't. So then they started me back on prednisone to get me buzzing again. And I took my last dose of chemotherapy that April of 2011, because it wasn't working anymore. So they had just stopped. And oddly enough, I just told this story last night, because yesterday was the third anniversary of my mom's passing, was yesterday. And today's the fourth anniversary of my husband's passing, and well, Kyle, my caregiver. And I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had not taken a step or moved my hands in like 4 months. And I get up because they have everything at toxic levels. They've started this cyclo. I had my last dose of cyclophosphamide, had all this medication in me. I got up in the middle of the night and started walking towards the nurse's station.
Wow.
And then they all turn their heads at the same time, and I hear this collective gasp, because we have a
Oh,
we have a crazy lady that can't move walking in the hallway. And they all look at me. And then, of course, as soon as they did that, then I felt like a wet noodle.
Of course.
I was busy trying to focus on standing up. And then
of course. And then people look at you and everything falls apart.
And I just went down, smash on the floor.
Oh.
Then they all come running and get me back in the bed and stuff. And then when the doctors came in the morning, they dropped all my meds. Like, I've been on that medication for like 6 years at this point, right?
Goodness.
They just dropped it. They just, because I'm up and walking. So they don't want me, because they didn't want me getting toxicity or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they should never have done it the way they did, because the nurses looked at Kyle and they said, they're going to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately went into withdrawals. 7 days. I don't remember any of the stuff. This is all just on the record stuff, because I don't have any recollection of it. I didn't sleep for 7 days. I didn't, I just full withdrew. I mean, it was crazy. I went into psychosis. They ended up putting me in the psych ward.
And, wow.
Cause I was violent. Like locked me down with posies on the neurological unit to the bed. So I couldn't bite people and kick people. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was, I'm glad I don't have any recollection of that, but, and then I phoned my dad. I was hiding in the bathroom because now I can walk, right? Because I'm whatever, I'm not walking, but I'm with a cane or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hiding in the bathroom talking to my mom on my cell phone. I said, Mom, you have to, I have to hide in here because the nurses are listening to my calls. And I can remember that. And I said, I need Dad to come get me out of here because they're going to lock me up. And my mom and dad lived like 2 hours out of the city, and my dad drove, and he was in my dad's in an electric chair. He's been disabled my whole life. And he drove all the way down there, and he was there in probably an hour and a half.
Wow. And
sped like a speed demon to get to me. And the last thing I remember seeing him, and I was crying, and they had two porters walking me, like guards walking me to the psych ward. Cause I was violent. And that was the last time my dad seen me before we went to Ottawa. And I think that was probably one of my hardest memories, is watching him just sit there in his chair and being completely helpless,
mm-hmm.
to watch his daughter getting taken away. Right.
Mm.
And then when I ended up, then I was in the psych ward till June. And then I got out of there. I just told this story last night and I was crying because it was just difficult. It was just difficult. And because crazy people are messy, right? And I mean, if they're just, they just open sugar and leave packets and sugar, like there's oddly they're messy. And I didn't know that about the mentally ill, but I learned it. And so I was on the brink, because now I'm on antipsychotics because they're trying to bring me back from the psychosis. And I'm walking and on a treadmill and I'm thinking I'm ruling the world. But I knew I was kind of on the brink of being gone forever in my broken brain,
or sure.
coming back to the side of the world of the normal people. And I say that with quotation marks because there's no normal people.
Of course not.
And I seen a psychiatrist on a Friday. I think it was like June 7th or something, or 4th. And I was supposed to be at the MS walk, but I missed all these months of time. And I didn't realize that I'd been in the hospital for 3 months. Like, I was so discombobulated.
Mm-hmm.
And they had told Kyle at this point that I wouldn't probably never come back. Like, I'd be broken, that I'd probably be locked up forever. And so he went home and he left me there. And I was just so terrified. So I went around and I was cleaning air. So I did the opposite of everybody else, right? I did the complete opposite of all the crazy people. And I was cleaning stuff and I was labeling count, like where the cups were in, like, cause they'd take the tape off and stuff. So I was retaping the labels and I'm putting stuff where it belongs and I'm wiping all the tables down and they're messing stuff up and I'm cleaning it. And then I said, I need to see a doctor cause I have to get out of here. Cause I'm on the brink of, I just have to get out of here. And I seen a psychiatrist that Friday and he said, do you have anybody that knows what you were like at the hospital prior to coming over here? like it's the same hospital system. I was in the Cracker Shack, and I said, yeah, my physiotherapist. And they called over my physio, and she came over to visit. And I'm walking on the treadmill, and she's walking on, and we're just BSing on the treadmills. And she, I guess, had a meeting with the psychiatrist, and I didn't know that. But she said she had told him, no, that's the girl I know. She's not, there's nothing wrong with her. And like mentally at this point. And I was so scared to be stuck in there. And then my friends came on the Saturday because it's the day of the MS walk. And I'm supposed to be, you know, finding my sponsors and getting donations and doing all that stuff for all these months. And of course, none of that happened because I was locked up. But they said to the nurse, like, can we take her on a day pass to the MS walk in my chair? And she phoned the doctor. And it was the same doctor who was on call from the day before. And hi, puppies. One up at mom's lap. And she called the doctor. And I literally heard him say, she's still there. Like his tone was very
upset.
Aggressive almost, right?
Mm.
And she said, yeah. And he says, get her out of there now. And so they gave me a day pass. I went to the MS walk with my friends. And then some other friends of mine picked me up from the MS walk. And we went out for dinner and spent the night like hanging out or whatever. And then they took me back to the hospital at 9 p.m. that night because he said, get her out and keep her out as long as possible. And so they did. And then I got back at 9 o'clock and I was in an ambulance on my way back to my mountain town again, my small hospital at 9 o'clock the next morning. And then I was back home and I was back in the hospital. I just transferred from hospital to hospital all the time. And that's when everything started to happen and had gone out to, so everybody was doing all this stuff while I was broken and right.
Sure.
They'd gone to Ottawa or to Montreal. They'd heard Dr. Friedman. They had my paper sent from my neurologist in Calgary, Dr. Pearson. So all this stuff is happening behind the scenes and I have no idea what's going on. And so they had me pumped full of steroids. So there I am walking around again and hiking and doing all the stuff I do. And we went out to Ottawa immediately. The end of June, we were out there for a visit with Dr. Friedman and I'd already had my heart test done to see if my body could take it, my heart test, my lung test and all that stuff. And he immediately said, yeah, so it was the third person done outside of the trials in Canada. And
amazing.
Yeah, it was cool actually. And then I flew back home and then we were going back out at the end of August or beginning of August 1st, I think, to see Dr. Atkins, who is the hematologist that does the transplants out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm back off steroids. So now I'm not walking again. And we get to Ottawa and I'm in my wheelchair and we go in to see Dr. Atkins and he says, we can't do this unless you can walk.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh my God. So then they did three dope. So then they put me on a really, really strong chemotherapy again. Because Dr. Atkins said, if you go home, you will never come back.
Mm.
And so we stayed. And they give me, starts with an M, meso something. Anyways, it's a really strong chemo. And you're really only allowed to have three doses in your lifetime.
Oh.
And they need to be, I think, like 6 or 8 weeks apart. And I had three doses in 3 weeks.
Oh my goodness. Your poor liver and kidneys.
And actually my liver is now starting to, I just had some tests done last week and I have, my liver enzymes are high. Mm. And so, I mean, there's damage done to the inside of me and stuff, but I don't think about that stuff because I was given 12 years.
Sure.
I wouldn't have had.
Exactly. Right? You're trying to fight for your life at that point. And they're
right.
Clearly just trying to figure out how to help save you.
Yep. And Maine wasn't legal yet, which is good because I wouldn't be here.
Right.
Because I would have signed on that line, I can tell you. And so they did that and got me walking yet again. So there
wow.
I am. Oh, my poor body.
Yeah.
And so there I am and I have to walk so far for so long. And so I'm just walking and walking and walking. And and Kyle be behind my wheelchair, and then I get tired and I sit in my chair, and then I get up and walk and push him, and like it was just like a marathon for a crippled lady.
Yeah, sounds like it, just to prove that you can go through this procedure.
Yeah, absolutely. And then and oddly, I was so excited to be in Ottawa for Remembrance Day, because that's huge, right? Like in if you want to be anywhere in the country for the biggest day of the year when it comes to, you know, honoring our people and all that kind of stuff, I was in Ottawa for Remembrance Day, and I said to Kyle, I said, we are going to Parliament. We're going down there. I don't care if I'm in my chair or not, but we're going to Parliament because I want to be here for that day. And then I get the phone call from the hospital at the hotel. And they're like, Fiona, you're being admitted into the hospital on November 11th at 11 a.m. Can you be there? Oh, sure. Yeah, I can.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and I'm not normally a numbers person, but oddly enough, I signed my paperwork in the hospital on the 11th month of the 11th year at the 11th hour on the 11th day.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. And then I had my transplant on December 29th.
Finally.
Yeah. Finally. Yeah.
And how did that go for you?
I was really sick.
Sure. I'd never been
so much in my life.
Yeah. I can imagine. Well, I mean, you already had so much toxicity.
Yeah. And so, because of course they, because in Ottawa, they do the full Mylo. So right. So I was so sick. And I just said to the nurses, I'm like, can you just lay me in the bottom of the shower and I'll just lay there and poop and go down the drain.
Right.
I don't want you guys to be changing me anymore. I just want the water to run and just please.
Right.
We're not allowed to do that. I'm like, just don't tell anybody.
Right. I won't tell.
I won't tell. Anyway. And then I ended up going through, because of course you go through forced menopause when you do the full myelo. So then I'm going through menopause and these poor nurses are fan on, fan off, fan on, fan off, pushing my button, beep, 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 beep. Oh goodness. And then I was in there till, I can't even think when, I think April, they sent me back home.
Wow.
And it was really cool. Like I can remember, I was so excited that I was just so excited. I don't even.
Did things start coming back online for you?
Right. Like it was, I can remember like when I was so sick still down there and I would send Kyle, cause I used to love chocolate milk, and I'd send him to the grocery store, which is like a mile and a half away. And all we had was a wheelchair and his legs. And he said, we probably put on 10,000 kilometers on my wheelchair when we were out there. And so I'd send him to the store to get this or that. And he'd bring it to me and I wouldn't eat it cause it was disgusting. And I had no taste buds.
Right.
And I like just throw that out. I'm like, oh man, poor Kyle. And then I can remember the first day they brought me chicken noodle soup. And I can remember the first day I could taste it.
Mm.
And like the salt, like, cause it was Campbell's or whatever. So the salt in it. And I could remember looking at Kyle and I said, oh my God, Kyle, I can taste this. And it was just like it was like the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
And I had one day where my sensory was back. I could feel my legs.
Wow.
I was able to, like, cause my sensory was out of whack. My temperature, like my thermostat doesn't work and I'm still incontinent. I catheterize every day. I do in and outs here at home all the time. And my bowels don't work right still. And I couldn't have babies because my reproductive organ runs with like, so this is stuff I'm just finding out now, like looking back, and nobody could figure out why I couldn't have babies. And I had stopped menstruating at about 25 or 26 for no reason. Like just, it was weird.
Oh,
but what it would have been is my MS, because reproductive organs are on the same nerve section in your spine as your bowel and your bladder.
Okay.
And my bowel and my bladder don't work. So why would my reproductive organs work?
Sure. Right?
And so we're just coming to all these things now, which is fine. But it was very sad because I wanted babies and I couldn't, and we didn't know why. So I had a mask before I ever got hit by the drunk guy, but the drunk guy just kind of triggered everything into
gear. Sure. Sounds like it.
And, goodness. So that was, then I had my transplant and it was awesome. Like it just went from, like I was over the moon. Like I just, my life was different. And that one day I could feel everything and I said to Kyle, I think they fixed me. I think they fixed me. And that only lasted one day. And then my sensory went back off out of whack and stuff. But I mean, nothing in comparison. And my neuro ophthalmologist looks at my eyes now and she says, because I had optic neuritis in both eyes. And she said, I couldn't even diagnose you because your scars are gone.
Wow.
So my body's healing, right?
Isn't that amazing?
It is. It's rejuvenating and it's healing and it's doing things like you don't even realize how powerful that is. It's like that. I've been blind twice and I can see, I can type, I can snap my fingers. I played cards last night at my friend's house. And I can remember the first day I was able to shuffle cards. I sat at my mom's kitchen table for like 12 hours doing nothing but shuffling cards.
Right.
Because, oh my God, I can shuffle, right? And I can snap my fingers.
Sometimes it's just the little things, right?
Yeah, right? Like
it that was are so huge.
Yeah, they're so huge. And yeah, and all that stuff kind of just started coming back. And I could walk with my hands in my pockets, not fall on my face. And I tested everything I could do. And then that was in 20. So I had my procedure in December 29th of 2011. And every day just got better and better and better. Yeah. It was phenomenal.
So it's been 12 years.
12 years last December.
Right. And yeah. I mean, what is life like now for you?
Well, like I said, I had a fever last week. And I was end up paralyzed and having to go to the hospital.
Which has to be terrifying, but it's like anytime we get sick, everything
goes back because the damage is still there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not all of it, of course, because my eyes are good, but some of it was so damaged. Like my nerves are frayed, right? And so my body just goes back to what it knows. Like it's
of course.
Like, muscle memory. Mm-hmm. I don't want to work. Let's just not do this today. But the upside is I always know I can come back now, right? I don't have the fear that I'm going to stay that way. And so I was only out for like a day and a half. We got my fever down. My legs came back. I was walking and everything.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I can go to see, there's so many little things that, like I can go to pool now. And I couldn't go to pool because my sensory was so out of whack. It felt like water was burning me.
Oh, wow.
But I can swim now, which is awesome. And it doesn't hurt. And like, there's just so many of those little things that
are huge. Going, yeah.
Right. And now I'm like, oh, this is so awesome. Uh-huh. There's days I can walk without my cane. So I kind of went back to my pre-serious, paralyzation. So now I'm kind of like, I would say probably like a 5.5 or a 6 on the EDSS. So lots of times I can walk without my cane. I don't do it in the winter because it scares me.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, in the summertime, I can ride a tricycle. It's awesome. Like what I can do is awesome. And none of that would have happened. Like if I hadn't been dying first.
Right. Or transplanted. That's amazing. Yeah. So why was it important for you to share your story on the podcast? And it sounds like you've even written a book.
I have. Yeah. I've written a book. It's called Fiona's Fight. And it's great. It tells everything that I just said to you. And well, because people, when I say I was at 9.0 on the scale, people don't, they look at me and they're like, that's not possible. I'm like, but it is because it happened, right? And my autonomic system was shutting down and my lungs weren't working and my brain was not getting the proper amount of oxygen. And I was having MS hugs that would literally curl me into like inside out. Like I would drop to the floor in a ball because it was so
tight.
And And so, and if there's an MS symptom, I've had it. Like I bend my neck and it's sparked. I have little. So most people with MS have this or that or this or that. I have this or that and everything else. There's not right. a symptom that I've not had, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I talk about plasmapheresis, people are like, what the hell is that?
Oh, right.
Like, well, it's just one of the things they did to try to save my life, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, they don't do that. And I'm like, they do if you were me, right?
Right.
And so it was great. Like, it was so... And Dr. Atkins, I mean, he saved my life that day when he said, if you go home, we'll never see you again.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we're keeping you here and we're going to do everything we can to save you. And they did. And I am forever grateful. We went out for like a 4 or 5 year check after. And Kyle and Dr. Freeman, Dr. Atkins are in the thing, and I had to go to the bathroom. So I just got up and walked down the hall. And Dr. Atkins, he's a scientist. He's not a faith-based person. He's a scientist, and the scientist his whole life. And he looked at Kyle when I was walking away, and I didn't hear him, but he looked at Kyle and he says, if I have ever seen a miracle, there's one right there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. And I am walking, talking, breathing.
Indeed.
All the miracles that happened to align to get me to Ottawa in the first place, for them to keep me there, for me to meet Kyle. It cost $250,000 to keep me out there for 10 months, right?
Mm.
Because we're in a hotel and we had to eat out because you can't have anything raw, right?
Right.
And there's no fridges in the little Rotary hotel across from the General Hospital in Ottawa. And you couldn't have a little heater in there, like a cook burner or nothing. So we had to eat out every day. And we both had mortgages out here. I had one, he had one, I had car payment, he had car, like that doesn't stop when you're away from home, right? Just because you're away from
right.
home.
Right.
And so, yeah, it was pricey. And Kyle had his retirement money and he used it to save my life.
Wow. And,
I'm forever grateful. And I look at the fact that he's been gone to heaven for 4 years today.
Mm.
And he, when all the people, it was so, I've had to talk to my pastor a couple of times because it stresses me out that all these people, like everybody's gone. I've lost 17 people in the last 5 years.
Wow.
And that were there to help me survive. And, like my dad did MAID in 2019 and my husband did MAID in 2020 and my mom did MAID in 2021.
Mm.
And then my grandpa, my uncle, like I've just lost a lot of people. And all the people that were there to help me survive, right? And to help me pick up the pieces over and over and over again are gone. And I have asked my pastor multiple times, like, why did God save me to have me watch everyone that I love die?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I guess I mean, I still don't have an answer. He just said, you're here for a reason, Fiona. You're here to help other people. You're here to show that you can survive anything. And my attitude is a lot. It saves my life. Like I have a great sense of humor and I don't really that much get me down. Right.
Well, yeah. Not, I mean, you can't.
No, not if you want to survive it. I mean, MS is not for the weak of heart. That's for sure.
That is for certain.
Yeah.
And so, gee whiz, just what a miracle you mm-hmm. are, right? I was going to ask, like, if there's a superpower that you've gained from your experience, but it seems like just living.
Yeah.
I don't want to answer it for you, but gee whiz. You've been through so much.
I'm hanging out with some people last night, and I walked in those. He's like, where's your cane? I'm like, in the car. and then I didn't need it because I was just walking to their apartment or whatever. I mean, I'm weak and tired from my episode a couple weeks ago, but how are you? I'm upright. It's an awesome day, right?
Like, yeah, right.
Everything, I've been given a blessing to share a life with people that didn't know they had an option, right?
Mm.
And I have so many people, like my two of my closest friends I've known for multiple years have now been diagnosed with MS. And
oh my goodness,
everybody phones me. And the first thing I say to them is, do not ever look at my MS as what MS is, as a picture of MS.
Right.
Because they, if, as soon as they hear MS, they're like, they know Fiona, they're like, oh my God, I'm dying tomorrow. Right.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, you're not. And so my girlfriend, Mary, she was diagnosed with MS, and she used to help me out all the time. She was one of my friends that would take me do stuff. And when I was sick, and now she's been diagnosed, but she jogs, you know, 6 kilometers every day and has two children since she's been diagnosed as, and is awesome. And she phoned me, she says, thank you so much for not, for just allowing me to have live my own disease, right? Mm. And not look at your life as what MS is.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, cause it,
we are snowflakes, right? Everyone, yeah, is, we're so all snowflakes. Unique.
Yep. Yep. Snowflake disease, right?
Yeah. Well, and you just happen to be the biggest, most beautiful snowflake I've ever seen.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah.
The most intricate, I would say.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was so blessed. And then Kyle, when I didn't die, he's like, well, you didn't die, I might as well keep you. So then he married
Aww.
Me. And that was in, so we, our anniversary was, would have been, we got married on the 6th anniversary of my stem cell transplant.
Okay.
And so in 2017. And then I said, well, it's a good thing you got a cute last name, because otherwise I wouldn't have married you. And he says, well, that's because now we're paramittens. And I said, yes.
And, oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah. And then in 2020, he'd passed away of pancreatic cancer. So.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. So life's become a little more complex because I don't have a caregiver.
Sure.
I still have incidents with my innards that should be mm-hmm. in when they're out. And
right. Right.
But I do lots of talking to God and lots of just faith. I just live within my faith and know that I'm here to share that it's not, we don't have to die. We don't have to change who we are because of MS, right?
Mm-hmm. And there's hope.
And there's always hope. There's always hope, right? I remember when I was in the hospital when W5 put that thing out about the Dr. Zamboni with the neck stuff. I can't even remember what it was called now. Anyways, he cured his wife of MS by doing neck surgery on her or something. And he was from Italy. And the MS, this is back in 2009. And I went down, I was in the hospital. I went down to the MS clinic and I was yelling from the front desk, Dr. Pearson, if there's a cure for MS, why am I paralyzed in this wheelchair in your hospital?
Right.
And I was so mad. Because that was on W5 that Saturday night, and I'm watching on the news, and if there's this fantastic cure, why am I blah, blah, blah?
Oh.
And she came out of her office, and she's just like, Fiona, has it been, because of course it hadn't come to Canada at all. She said, I watched it, and she said, do you trust me? And I said, she'd been my neurologist for like 5 years, or 4 years, I guess. And she says, do you trust me? And I said, yes. Do you trust me with your life? And I said, yes. And she said, it's not tested, it's not proven, and it's not safe.
Mm.
It was, we would do it for you, but it's not, and we're not going to. And I thank her every day for being that person, because it wasn't real. And lots of people got very sick. Some have died because of it. It was just such a quick fix, and everybody in the MS world, MS society
right.
world was like jumping on the bandwagon and blah, 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 blah. And it made the MS society look bad. And I'm like, you know what? If it wasn't for the MS society and the women that love me, I wouldn't be here.
Mm.
And if I didn't have the faith and the trust in the doctors that took care of me, I wouldn't be here. And I just need to always just follow the people that have taken care of me and have loved me all this time and have just given me all the right advice and just said, just follow us and you'll be okay.
Mm. Right?
And that's what I did. And I just was, I was so well loved and taken care of. And yeah, there's days I wake up and I'm like, oh, I woke up again. And those are days like yesterday and today when I'd like to go to heaven and see my husband, my dad, my mom.
Sure.
And then there's days I wake up, I'm like, oh my God, what a beautiful day. I put a post up on Facebook the other day, the sunrise was spectacular. And I took a video of it and I said, all my people are in heaven and they're making the world shine today.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And so amazing for you to find those gifts, right? In the now and the present.
Well, because I have to be where my hands are. Right? Mm. I don't have to. I have a tattoo of my hand, on my arm that I get to. And I get to live every moment. And I treasure every moment because there was a time in my life where I didn't have any moments. They were all running over each other. And now I get to sit in my world and just know that every moment is mine. And this day and everything we've talked about and everything that I get to spend my day with and the people you get to share your day with and all that only happens one time ever. Not every feeling, not every word, not every thought, not every person is ever going to be in the same location, same time, thinking the same thing ever again. So when I look at the fact that I get to live in moments of time and I treasure them because they're so important, because I don't know when mine's going to flicker out again.
Mm.
And that's how I live my life.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
And inspirational and just pure, right?
Yep. I'm as authentic as they come. I have so many poop stories. I could be a stand-up.
And maybe you could be.
Yep. And I laugh all the time because
you've got to find joy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
If anyone knows, it's you.
Yep. And so what about you've had a transplant, I'm assuming.
Indeed, in 2017, October of 2017. Mine was non-myeloablative with Dr. Burt in Chicago.
Okay. So and how is that different other than you guys don't get quite as beat up as we do?
Yeah, that's basically it. Our chemo is not as intense and does not obliterate the bone marrow.
Okay.
So our chemo focuses on the immune cells that carry the negative messaging of autoimmune. But it's just five or six doses. Cyclophosphamide and then RATG was the chemo that I had.
Yeah, and that's what I had. And then, I mean, other than that really high dose, they had to give me in Ottawa that shot me from like not walking to walking miles.
Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think our chemo regimen is almost half of what myeloablative protocols are. But otherwise, same spiel.
Yeah. See, I think in my head, I always get worried about you guys. And like I do a little bit because I know for me that if I'd had what you guys had, I would have been sick again. Like my disease would have come back.
Yeah, it's quite possible, right? I mean, it's hard.
And that scares me. If doing people like me, I mean, I know that we're rare, but if they're doing people like me and they're not doing the full shebang, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they're not going to get the results that I have.
That makes total sense.
Yeah. And I actually have a friend, Chad, in Strathmore, Alberta, and he, I think, went to Russia, maybe Mexico, I'm not sure. And he's very sick. And and it makes my heart sad because he, of course, had what you had.
The non-myeloablative.
Yeah.
Although the Russia and Mexico protocols are different than Dr. Burt's protocol.
Yes. And so are you Canadian or not?
No, I live in outside of Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Yeah, very Midwest. But so it was just a 5-hour drive to Chicago for us.
Yeah.
And then I was inpatient for 2 weeks while I went through transplant. And we were there just for a couple nights. well, I guess it was a week to do the injections, Neupogen injections after a dose of chemo. So before they harvested the stem cells.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I believe my disease has been halted and I've certainly experienced improvements, which are the bonus. And I feel like I continue to improve. And if anything, this year, I'm just committed to walking as much as I can on the treadmill or anywhere, right? Because you got to keep moving. Move it or lose it.
Move it or lose it. And that's true. And even our brains, right? Like, it's amazing how if I don't think, if I don't do things to test my cognitive abilities, if I'm not doing things to focus on getting well every day, we regress so much faster. That's what I noticed. Like, if I don't go to the gym for 2 days, like a normal, a not broken person, right?
Yes.
They can go a couple of weeks and then they'll kind of notice, oh, I should go to the gym. I'm feeling a little whatever. For me, that's within like 10 hours. Like,
yes. Like every day.
Regress. Yeah.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. So, well, there you go. That's me, Jen.
It's been a wonderful story, wonderful learning with you and from you. Of course, I'm wishing you all the best in health and wellness as you continue to live and be present in each moment. What a gift to the world you are.
Oh, I think we all are. That's why I said God only gives that best to people that can handle it.
Right. Right. For sure. So thank you for handling it with such grace and finding joy and humor in life. It's so important, right?
I actually think the doctor said to me, I would not have made it if it hadn't been for my attitude. Yeah.
That's key.
The majority of people would have given up long before I did.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you stuck it out and hung in there and, you know, pulled yourself up when you were down.
Yeah. Well,
so inspiring.
I had amazing people around me. Sorry for interrupting. I had amazing people around me to help me pull up my bootstraps, right?
Of course. But ultimately, you know, you were there too, doing all the work and the important work indeed to live.
I have a cat on my armchair, my office chair right now, and a little dog. They both licking my foot and on my lap. Giving kisses for a beautiful day.
Yeah. See, I mean, they're here to nurture us as well. So.
Right. Oh yeah. And they're beautiful. Creatures are so beautiful. Yeah.
Well, enjoy every moment.
Shall do. And so where does this air? Where does it play?
So, No, you're good. You'll always be able to find episodes on our website. HSCTWarriors.org and then the podcast website, HSCTWarriorsPodcast.org. And then it streams in any podcast app that you are connected to.
Wow.
Most any. So like the iTunes podcast app or Spotify, Pandora, SoundCloud is where we host the podcast. So you can always find it there too.
Nice. So when did you start this? Like, what was the...
I was going through transplant in the hospital, I listened to a lot of podcasts to pass the time. And I thought, you know, I was so nervous and anxious going into transplant. And I realized about halfway through, like, that wasn't necessary. And I, you know, showed up with an attitude of kindness and gratitude, just tried to be thankful for, you know, even when the nurse came in at 2:30 in the morning, to start an antibiotic or something. That was, you know, thank you for being here. Thank you for caring for me. Thank you for doing this. Like, just gratitude. I poured gratitude out, just trying to be grateful for every moment and every experience. Even when they took an hour to place my catheter, which was quite uncomfortable, I was very grateful once they finally succeeded. Right. And so I don't know. I just realized that the stress and anxiety I showed up with wasn't necessary and it might be holding some people back, and that maybe hearing stories from people might help alleviate some of that stress and anxiety.
Mm.
And so, I don't know, I love to listen and hear and connect with people at that authentic level. And so I host conversations outside of the podcast that, you know, I like to hold space for people to connect. And so being able to host this platform and help people even find trust in me to share their story is an honor and a privilege. And I'm grateful, you know, that you're willing to do this and share your story because of its so many complexities. And maybe not everyone will hear something they relate to, but hopefully they do, right? And that's ultimately my goal, is just help promote awareness of this transplant because not enough people know about it, and help alleviate some of that anxiety as people prepare to go through what's a pretty big deal, but so worth it.
Yeah, and also, sorry for interrupting, there was I had a friend of mine, she's since taken her own life, but she had a transplant not long after me, but she had it for stiff person disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so important for us to, and this is just for me, I need to say that it's so important that that I came into it not having expectations of mm-hmm. that I was going to be fixed.
Right. Yes.
And because so many people, they're like, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to come back and be completely normal. And nope. That's not true.
Right? Not even close. Right.
Right. And it's so important for people to realize it's not just, we're not being cured, we're being halted. Right.
Right. Exactly.
And but that doesn't take the damage that's done away.
Exactly. It's hard for people to understand that,
yeah,
especially people who haven't even gone through the transplant, right? Because I know family members were kind of waiting once I got home, like they're waiting for me to just be better. And it's like, I still have old damage that I'm still working to heal. And it's slow, but sure. Like 4.5 years post-transplant was the first time I could actually lift my left leg and cross it over my right on its own without picking it up, right? Like I didn't have to actually pick it up.
I still pick mine up.
Sure, right. I mean, and so I've been there, right? And but I believe in neuroplasticity. I believe in our body's capacity to heal itself if we support it to do so.
Absolutely, right? 100%. Yep.
But it's a long road.
It is.
And a slow road, and there's a lot of setbacks.
Yeah. And it's also a lot of trying to stay away from, that's the hardest part for me, is infections and stuff, of course, mm-hmm. because I'm very incontinent, and so everything's still not working properly.
Sure.
And so I get infections a lot. And so I work really hard at knowing that I'm going to be okay in a few days, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the right medication, I'm on the right antibiotics, and I'm coming back to normal. And I have to just be gentle with myself, because it seems every time I have a fall, because it's not a relapse, because I'm not progressing. I don't know what they're called. But when I have some sort of whatever, and my body's like, I don't want to do this, it seems to be a little bit more difficult to come back every time. Because
mm-hmm.
I've been paralyzed still. Probably I was in the hospital last year. I was in the hospital this year, like last 2 weeks ago. I was paralyzed in 2016, really bad. Had to go back to rehab 2014. So those are big ones. And then.
Then it's amazing that you can now walk without a cane.
Right.
It's just a walking miracle, literally.
Yeah. And it's the beauty of being able to know that it's going to be hard coming back, but I can always come back. And.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember waking up one day and realizing that my rejuvenation is so much faster. Like when I would get sick before, something would happen, I'd be down for like 6 months. Now I'm like down for like a day and a half, right?
Right. It's unbelievable.
I know. And people look at me like, weren't you not just not walk? I'm like, yeah, but that was last week. Doesn't matter.
Right. All right.
Oh, right. No, I'm good.
Things change.
Minute by minute, I think that's the beauty of our lives. are not, minute by minute, we're different people.
Beautiful indeed.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing this inspiration and your
you bet,
story
Jackie.
and your journey and your book. I'll follow up with an email to make sure I have the title right. And then if it's online anywhere, we can link to that
Well,
in the show notes.
I'm going to get it put back online because I took it off because it was like so many years. I was written in 2014 and my life has changed so much since then. So so I took it offline. I don't even know when I did that, but I can get it back on Amazon. I just need to figure out how. They send me emails all the time. I just need to figure out how. And
yeah, if you'd like to, but if not, no worries. I was just going to offer to share it.
Yeah. Oh, no, you can. And if people want a copy, they can just text or email you or me, and you have my email, and
yes.
I can send them a copy. Like, I've got books in my closet, so it's not. Yeah.
You're wonderful.
There you go.
It's been wonderful connecting with you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to me yatter.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing your story, and I'm sure that anyone out there listening will also find gratitude and appreciation for you and your outlook in life and all the inspiration you've shared. Thank
Well,
you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, you have a beautiful day, and
oh,
I'm going to go get dressed for church.
Yeah, you enjoy it, and a beautiful day as well. Take good care.
I will.
Thanks, Fiona.
Okay.
Bye. Bye. Be sure to visit hsctwarriorspodcast.org, where you can find notes from today's episode, submit ideas or feedback, and connect with resources and the HSCT Warriors Incorporated nonprofit. As always, special thanks to musical genius Billy Alitzhauser for sharing his superpowers to create the soundtrack, edit, and produce the audio to make this podcast possible. You can find us both when you subscribe on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you find podcasts. It has been amazing to connect with warriors worldwide, and we would love to hear from you about how the podcast has helped your journey with autoimmune disease. Take a moment to connect with us on Instagram or share this episode with someone you know that would enjoy listening. In the meantime, we hope you'll tune in next Wednesday for another episode highlighting another HSCT warrior. Until then, be a snowflake and embrace your superpowers. Be kind. Be well. Jen Stansberry Koenig and the producers disclaim medical influence and responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. If you think you have a medical problem, please contact a licensed physician and take good care.